Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse MLL Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined as always by Kyle Devitt. And Kyle, we've got a lot to catch up on. There's been a lot of MLL action in the interim since we've last recorded. Take a few breaks for things such as the 4th of July and the World Games, as did the MLL, at least 1 week off for the World Games. And here we are back. What do you have to say? The playoff picture is kind of cleared up. It's pretty surprising that the Rochester Rattlers and Denver Outlaws at 8-3 are very much in pole position.
I'd like to say I told you so, but I don't think I said I told you so on Rochester soon enough. I kind of rode the wave, but I still got in there a couple games for everyone else. So feel good about my thoughts on the best teams in the league, Denver and Rochester. And, you know, I guess Chesapeake is somehow still eligible. I got an email from the MLL telling me that, and I don't believe them. But apparently the math shakes out that if everyone else loses and they win the next three games, they could conceivably be in line for the fourth spot, but I don't actually believe it.
So to that end, there are basically, would you say that the Lizards, Cannons, and Machine are all competing for the fourth spot, or is that basically between the Cannons and the Machine?
It's Cannons, Machine. I mean, the Hounds can still win if the Hounds have a matchup with Ohio coming up. If New York wins this week, they clinch a spot. And if Chesapeake and Ohio lose and Charlotte lose, they clinch a spot. So I think New York is good either way as if they win this week. And then, that last spot is really what it comes down to. And then Boston, you know, like I said in the column this week, the final spot comes down to Boston. Like if Boston beats Florida two times in a row, they're in. So, and they have the tiebreaker over Ohio, but if Boston splits or loses both games, you know, they're in big trouble.
So as the field has separated, what has been the biggest surprise to you? And to me, there are three candidates. Chesapeake falling out of contention to the point where they may or may not actually be eliminated. You know, I'm not sure how big of a surprise this is, but when you consider how hot they started, Florida falling out of the playoff picture also, you know, kind of surprises me. And then the Rattlers separating themselves in the positive direction. Which is the biggest surprise to you, or is there one off the board?
The Rattlers. 100%. And you know, I tried to, like I said, I rode the wave of contrition early. You know, I said this team was going to be bad. Everyone said this team was going to be bad. And somehow they I call them the Island of Misfit Toys. And somehow they have all united. And I give a lot of the credit to Sudan, bringing in the right guys and having a system where, you know, they have like eight attackmen on that team and somehow they all work together. It's nuts. I think it's really just one of the best stories to come out. You know, no one goes to the games, but they don't care. They just play to play. And that's what the league is kind of all about at this point is playing to play. Especially if, you know, Florida and Rochester are getting less than 1200 people to come see the games. Like that's an issue, but you know what? The players can't do anything about it. That's not their problem. They're just there to play. And I think that's the best part about that story.
So there are a couple of like sports writer reasons why you could point to the Rattlers being this good. And one of them that I want to initially start out with is probably the biggest surprise because he didn't play last week despite the fact that they were able to beat the Bayhawks 12-7 and I don't know, de facto eliminate them from playoff contention. And that is, there's like building momentum that Jordan Wolf is the best, maybe the best lacrosse player in the world. How do you react to that statement?
After what, like three monster games?
Well, and like a clearly dominant college season in which his speed and his inability to be matched up with strikes fear into the heart of opposing defensive coordinators.
Sure. I think a lot of that is built on the back of the guys that he has torched in the MLL, and one of them was Tucker Durkin. I mean, he took him to the woodshed. After that game, after that launch game, I was like, wow, Tucker Durkin's going to make the USA team, you know? Which we can get into that later if you want. But, I mean, that was definitely something that opened my eyes, not necessarily his point total. A lot of people just point to the point total and just be like, hey, look, this is what he did and this is what's happening and think that he's the next best thing because he has all these points. Well, you know, guys like Curtis Dixon did that too. You know, I'm not trying to take anything away from him. I think he's a great player. I think the whole, you know, the hyperbole of him being the best lacrosse player in the world after three MLL games and a great college season is much, I think. He's got to do it more consistently over a longer body of work for me to even get on that train.
Okay, that's fine. And that's a reasonable reaction, one that I wouldn't have expected from you, despite the fact that, you know, whatever. That was kind of a dig, but didn't really make that much sense, because you're prone to overreaction, but you're not prone to stating that a certain player is the best player, so.
I'm not prone to positive overreaction.
There you go. That's probably an easier way to put it. But then, okay, so then you go, all right, well, you made the point about how, you know, they're playing so many attackmen, et cetera. But I also look at the opposite end of the field where, you know, they've got a couple of guys who might be Defensive Player of the Year candidates. But it's just very hard to separate yourself in this league with good defense, at least this season. I mean, the top five defenses are within 8 goals allowed of each other, separated by two goals apiece. So Denver has allowed 126 goals this season. The Lizards have allowed 134. And Rochester, Boston, and Chesapeake are each 2 goals apart from each other in between. So, I don't know. Like, it seems to me like they're not winning the games with defense. They're just winning games. And sometimes it's that simple. And I think that a lot of times, you know, people like you and me and sometimes fans want to make it more complicated than that, but you're the guy that watches the games more religiously than anybody else. So just to take one more stab at trying to boil down why the Rattlers are good.
The Rattlers are good because they have a great defensive unit that has played together and has some good games. Like they do play good defense. And yes, they do let people run up the score sometimes. I mean, New York, they gave up 18 to New York. New York beat them. They gave up 18 to Ohio. Ohio beat them. But they also know how to score. I mean, they've held opponents, to single digits. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, you know, 4 or 5 times. And that's big in the MLL. That's especially this year where the parity has made it so that some games are terrible. Like their game against, the first game they played against Chesapeake is like the worst MLL game I think I've ever seen this year. The 8-7 win. That was,
we were very hard on that game on this podcast.
I will not let go of that. I won't. There are things I'll let go of. I will not let go of that. That was awful. I want like my time back. Like that's how bad that game was, but they played all these other amazing games, you know? Yes, was that a 2-OT game? Sure. Yay. 2-OT games of guys dropping the ball and falling down and drawing penalties is awful. But they win close games too. They beat Boston 8-7 earlier in the year. And then there's games where like they're world beaters. I mean, it's crazy. When the second game against New York, they crushed them. It was 15-9, but it was like not that close. You know, the second game against Denver, they crushed them 19-14. And that's the thing for me that really shows with them is that the second time they play a team, they win. You know what I mean? Like they might win ugly the first time, but the second time they play you, they're going to figure you out and they're going to go right at you. And the thing that's also crazy about this team is that their roster turnover is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
That's probably the part that stands out to me most dramatically, because and maybe in the way that like has the roster shown over the season, and we knew this coming into the year, was going to be more dramatic than in any season prior because it was going to have this mid-season shakeup by virtue of the World Games. And in some instances, you know, it's the unreliability of rookies who don't necessarily know what they need to do in order to make every game in the league and stuff like that, that can come into play. And I think that that's a little bit been the case, not just for the Rattlers, but I mean, you look at, you know, even Denver, probably the team with the most continuous and most continuity within their lineup, has had a lot of guys in and out of the lineup. Curtis Dixon being, you know, a really tangible, example of that. You know, Ken Clawson being another guy who, you know, almost haphazardly pops up in the lineup. So it's just, I don't know. There's part of me that like maybe the Bayhawks' lack of ability to find a consistent lineup has created some problems as it relates to their simple things. You and I were talking yesterday about, well, you were telling me about their inability to simply throw and catch, and maybe lineup consistency can't be attributed as the reason for that. But yeah. I just think that there's everybody's dealing with it. So maybe the fact I agree that it's impressive that the teams that are winning despite dealing with it deserve credit, but maybe not necessarily as much credit as you might otherwise think, because like the other teams that are having good seasons are dealing with it as well.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of wrote the column this week, which was basically about, you know, bizarre world Boston. You know, there's a world where Boston's 10-1 pretty easily. And all they have to do is win their one goal games. They played in seven of them. If they won all the one goal games, they'd be 10-1, top of the table, you know, looking down on everybody else pretty easily. And the thing about that is that, you know, when you look at the breakdown of other teams, there aren't a ton of other teams that have that many one goal losses and played other teams that tight. And the thing about Boston is Boston plays a very distinct style. And it's not the same style that Rochester or Denver plays, or even Chesapeake. Chesapeake should be playing like Boston plays, where they take the air out of the ball. You know, as much as you can with the 60-second shot clock, they will grind you. Like, that's what Boston does. That's what Boston is good at. And that's why their games are close, because they don't let it turn into a track meet. The one time they did is, you know, the second game they played against Charlotte, and they got crushed. You know, they can't play that style. And there are, you know, the Bayhawks have so much talent, and they think they can play that way, but they can't, because they don't have, you know, the long outlets. You know, Chesapeake relies almost exclusively on Abbott to clear the ball. Dude can't do it every single time, but somehow it does. They don't have a lot of other two-way middies on that team, and they have to switch out of the box a lot, and that stops your progress. And that's what, you know, when they play Boston, when Boston beat them Boston lost one, but Boston killed them in the opener, is because Boston played, you know, standard 6-on-6 lacrosse and killed all their breaks. I mean, that's how they play. And if you watch teams like Denver and Rochester, and even Ohio to a certain extent, they don't play that way. They play, you know, traditional fun and gun MLL lacrosse, where, you know, everyone, you know, not everyone gets a touch, but, you know, when you get a touch, you make something happen. And, that's not how Boston plays. So I think it's really intriguing that basically the whole season and the whole playoffs come down to these launch and Boston games.
Well, we kind of veered off track there a little bit, at least as it relates to talking about the Rochester Rattlers. But why don't we go ahead and bring in somebody who can speak, very dramatically and very pointedly to the nature of the fun and gun type of, style that they play. That being Mark Cochranin, who put up 5 goals against the Bayhawks last week.
Maple Leaf, rejoice!
And the Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast continues with Rochester Rattlers attackman Mark Cochranin coming off of a 5-goal performance and a 10-7 win over the Chesapeake Bayhawks last week. And Mark, you know, Kyle and I have been talking a lot about how surprising this Rattlers team is, you know, in terms of being tied for first place heading into the stretch run, heading into the postseason. And a big part of that is the ability of guys to step up when needed. And your team really needed you, last Thursday night against the Bayhawks. How do you kind of put your goal scoring response in contrast with the need that your team had on offense on that particular night, given the guys who weren't there?
Yeah, no, like you said, like we had a lot of guys missing, and we needed somebody to step up. And I mean, me being a rookie, you know, I thought it was, you know, my task to do that. I felt like even a lot of guys that were there on offense, you know, haven't really played that much, but you know, I felt like I played good, and I got the good spots, and people were feeding me the ball, and luckily that ball was going in the net there.
Mark, earlier on in the year, you played a lot of came out of the box a lot, played a lot of midfield, didn't get to start at your traditional kind of right side, left side attack position, and the goals kind of like play out and show that. You playing attack, you've scored just a bucket load of goals in the past couple weeks. How does that transition, kind of, you know, being more comfortable playing that position, help you out?
Yeah, you know, I've been playing attack my entire life, so I definitely feel like I'm more comfortable down there. And you guys saw my first 3 years at Virginia, I was running out of the box, and I feel like I just wasn't comfortable doing that. You know, my whole entire life, like I said, I've been playing attack, and then my last couple of years there, they moved me to attack, and I thought they were just much more successful there, just my natural position. And kind of the same thing with this Rochester team, you know. We had Mark Matthews down there on the lefty attack, and they ran me out of the box. And the last couple of games, so Mark was hurt a couple of games, so they put me in. And Mark was away for the World, so I got another shot. And I feel like now I just proved them that, you know, I can take that left side attack on, and, you know, hopefully I proved them that I can enough that they can keep you there.
Mark, people talk a lot about, like, the ML, they say things like the ML is a midfielders league, or, you know, the ML is a veterans league or something like that. The ML is a rookies league. I mean, sometimes these statements are in complete contrast with one another, but what do you think of the idea? And this is something that I'm positing simply thinking about the way that you play. You're shooting 55%. You're a guy who is unafraid of running at his defender. What do you think of the idea that it's so simplistic that it seems stupid, but like the MLL is a Dodgers league. And then by contrast to that, one of the things that watching you play at Virginia this year that really stood out was your ability to like hit feet set shots from 10 plus yards. I haven't been able to see you in as much, you know, in a Rattlers uniform this summer. So to what degree do you feel like the MLL is a Dodgers league and that plays into your hands? And then how does that correlate with, you know, what I saw from your game this year, which was, this ability to shoot from range? And how has that kind of transitioned, over the course of this MLL season?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I would probably disagree with the whole dodging, the MLL is a dodging league. I feel like it's so much different from college that every player is so good that I feel like you have to work more off ball. You know, in college, you might be able to get, you know, if you're the best dodger on the team, you might be able to get 20 dodges in a game. But in MLL, everyone wants their shot. Everyone wants to go. So I feel like you're getting less dodges. So I feel like to be more effective, you have to be more of an off ball guy. I feel like that's just what I've been trying to do so far. I feel like in college, I was, especially this past year, I was more of a dodger. But in the MLL so far, I'm just trying to get the good spots. And, you know, these guys are so good that they're just they have a good vision and feed me, and, you know, I'm putting it in, so.
All right, I feel like I should have led with this, but I need to kind of apologize to you for where you got picked. I wrote one of the draft reviews, and a lot of the GMs thought you were going to play in Canada, so I put that in there. Obviously, that kind of isn't the case with you being available. As much as you have been, when did you kind of decide to play MLL over box, or are you splitting, or are you just taking a year off?
Yeah, no, it was pretty interesting going towards the draft. I mean, I thought I was going to be like a late first round, early second round pick, so I was pretty disappointed about that. But yeah, no, I heard there was like a rumor going around about me wanting to play box up in Canada, but I feel like, me personally, I mean, nobody really contacted me, and I actually would rather play MLL than play in the box league up here, which is pretty interesting. But I didn't even really watch the draft after, I think, like four rounds came by. I just kind of, it was pretty upset and just turned it off. But, and I feel like I'm just trying to prove them wrong, and, you know, hopefully, I mean, it's been working out so far, but no, I just really want to help out the Rattlers, and that's what I've been able to do so far.
What's it been like going from standing at the midline watching Jordan Wolf at the other end of the field to now playing alongside him?
Wait, sorry, say that again?
What's it been like going from watching Jordan Wolf play at the other end of the field to now playing alongside him?
Yeah, no, I mean, playing against him, you know, sucks. He's one of the best players that, you know, I've ever seen, definitely the quickest. And he's just like he's a matchup nightmare against any defender. You know, he's almost uncoverable at some times. But playing with him is awesome. You know, he draws so much attention down there at X, and if I can find my way in the middle, and he's going to draw the double every single time. So I'm just trying to get open, and he's got good vision, and he's going to feed me the ball. And you know, he wasn't there last game, and I was able to, you know, have success. But I feel like when he's there, I'm just able to get open because he draws so much attention down there.
Obviously, Team Canada beat the U.S. for the gold. And what are your feelings on that? Any mixed feelings because you weren't on the team, or you know, what are you? You know, I assume you know a lot of guys on the team. How was that experience for you?
I mean, yeah, I was definitely disappointed not being on the team. You know, I'm definitely happy with those guys. You know, it was an awesome win, great for Canada. But no, I mean, it was disappointing me not being on the team. I was still cheering for them, obviously, but you know, it was a good game. I felt like the best part of their team, though, was defensively, I thought, especially in the last game there. They just completely shut U.S. down, which is so surprising, given the players that they have. But, yeah, they came out with the game plan, and they executed it, and, you know, they ended up winning gold. It was awesome.
Mark Cochran, as your team heads into the stretch of this MLL season, you know, what are some of the things that you guys are talking about amongst yourselves, that Coach Zidane is talking to you about, just to make sure that you're on point heading into the playoffs, which is a little bit of a unique experience for this franchise?
Yeah, no, I don't think they've been in the playoffs since maybe 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, something like that. But what we basically been talking about is just pretty much doing the same thing that we've been doing the entire year. You know, this group that we're on right now at the Rattlers, we're so close, and you know, everyone's friends with everybody, and it's amazing to be part of a team that's like that. That's probably the closest I've ever been a part of, and that's one of the main reasons we're having so much success. You know, no one's trying to do it all themselves. Everyone's moving the ball, and you know, it's really been working out for us, and if we just continue to do the same thing, yeah, I think we got a pretty good shot at winning the championship this year.
All right. You know, thanks for giving us your time. Really appreciate talking to you, Mark. And, you know, good luck, this week. And, hopefully, you know, you get that left side spot attack and, we'll see you soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
So we want to thank Mark Cochran for joining us on the podcast. 16 goals and surprisingly no assists through this season that he's been with the Rattlers. And it was a little interesting kind of bit of tension there when you were talking about the draft, Kyle. You can tell he's one of those guys that's not soon going to forget the place that he was taken.
I mean, I apologized. I do feel like it's kind of my fault.
I don't, because I do remember being there, and the word was getting out shortly before. His dad was at the, you know, not at the draft, but he was at the convention. Like, it shouldn't have been that difficult for a GM to find him and say, hey, does your son want to play?
I don't think they're allowed to do that.
They're definitely allowed to do that.
Are they?
Can ask the college coaches. I think the only thing they're not really allowed to do, but some of them still do anyway, is contact the player directly.
Oh, don't say that. NCAA will come knocking.
I mean, if the NCAA is not coming knocking when college coaches are talking to, you know, 13-year-olds, I don't think they're going to worry too much about current college players being addressed by MLL GMs. But what do I know? I've never seen that happen. I've never been on a phone call when I've heard that happen. So that's
straight salesman.
Yes, that's not for me to say.
Let's move on.
The Rochester Rattlers host the Charlotte Hounds Saturday night at 7 p.m. And if the Charlotte Hounds don't work a minor miracle and make it to the MLL postseason, this is one of three remaining opportunities to see the guy that you say could be the MLL Rookie of the Year this season, him being Justin Ward of the Loyola Greyhounds, and now the Charlotte Hounds, Loyola South. He has 26 points in 7 games, averaging nearly 4 points a game on 12 goals and 14 assists. And Kyle, what about Justin do you feel like has stood out the most as you've watched him play and watched him develop as an MLL player?
I mean, he came in and, you know, he's primarily known as a feeder, and he's done a good job doing that. He has 14 assists, like you said. But his ability to go and create his own shot, I think, is very impressive. You know, and I didn't think he could do that. He wasn't asked to do that a lot at Loyola this past year. And he's done a great job of scoring. You know, I feel like it's much easier for players to come in and play if they get to play their natural position instead of, you know, like Cochran said, being switched to midfield and coming out of midfield where his natural position is attack. If you're allowed to play your natural position and do the things that you're good at, the transition is much easier. And I think he's one of the guys that has really benefited from that.
Who are some of the other guys in the Rookie of the Year conversation? I mean, is Mike Chanichuk one of his teammates who's got 13 points in the year? Is he in the conversation?
I mean, he hasn't had as many dominant performances. Obviously, we talked about, you know, Jordan Wolf having, you know, complete dominance in the few games he's played. I don't think he's played enough games to be considered yet, but if he lights up the next three, you know, he didn't play last week because of a work commitment, but if he plays in the next three and really, you know, keeps up the same pace, I think that he's in the conversation. I really like, this is a super crazy dark horse, and it's not going to get a lot of press, but I think the play of Rob Emery has been amazing in Boston. Just he's got the MLL body. He's got the style. He's big. He's strong. He runs hard. I think if he was on a different team, he would have a lot more points, but you know, like we said before, the way Boston plays, you know, the touches are everyone gets a touch, but your chances to score are a little more limited in a lower, you know, volume offense. But I think he's been very good, especially the last couple games.
It's interesting that you're able to talk about a lower volume offense, in a league that has a shot clock, particularly in the context of all the conversations that are occurring regarding the shot clock in college lacrosse, but that's neither here nor there. Well, let's move on to a Saturday afternoon matchup as the Denver Outlaws head to just north of Columbus to take on the Ohio Machine, 4:30 p.m. at Selby Stadium. And Kyle, I mean, is this like basically the last gasp for the Ohio Machine at, I believe they're 5-6 are they 5-6 or 5-7?
5-6.
Yeah. So what do you think? Is this a win or go home game for Ohio?
Yeah. And I think, you know, Denver's, you know, clinched a playoff spot. I mean, the thing, this is weird about Denver. And I know we're not talking about Denver. We're talking about Ohio because they're on the cover this month, but, Denver, even if they get one of the top seeds to host the game, they're going to play in their home stadium. They're going to have to find somewhere else to play.
Because of the Denver Broncos?
Yes, because of Peyton Manning. So if that's the case, like, how much do they care? I mean, obviously they still want to be in Denver. I don't know. I think that's a weird conversation to have. But if Ohio wins this game, and Boston loses, Ohio kind of edges ahead of them because Boston has the tiebreaker for that fourth spot. And like I said, you know, Rochester and Denver clinch and New York clinches with a win this week. So if those three spots are locked up, then it's like a slugfest for that last one. And, Ohio does need to win, to stay in the conversation.
Well, you know, staying on the theme of kind of end of the season awards, you know, a potential MVP candidate is going to be playing in this game, and, you know, that's Eric Law. How solid do you think his argument is to be the 2014 MLL MVP?
I think if you look at the circumstances, I mean, usually with these awards, they don't look at like where what he was doing last year, who his teammates were last year as opposed to this year, what role he's playing. But I do, and you know, if I had a vote, I think he would get it. Just cause you look at what he's done, I mean, he's basically replaced Brendan Mundorf. I mean, that's something that no one thought would happen. I mean, yes, he's playing with Junior, but, and Dixon has come in to fill that other spot, but Bocklet has fallen off a cliff with, you know, injuries, and he's still replaced a lot of those goals. He's, I believe, third in the league in scoring. He's definitely, all right, so he is fifth in the league in scoring by 1 point, behind Will Manny. Really just an excellent playmaker, an excellent feeder, and by all accounts, just like a solid dude. You know, just like his teammates love him. He never complains. He's very humble. Just a really excellent player. Like if I needed a
goal.
You
sound like Mark Schlereth or somebody talking about, like, you know, an NFL fullback.
I know. Well, I get to meet like a decent amount of these guys, and like Eric Law's like the nicest guy I've ever met. You know, like I can't talk about him without painting it with my own experience. But I'll say this, if I needed a goal and it was coming off the end line and it was off a restart, I would probably pick Eric Law to have that ball to get that goal. I would.
Would you want him going to the goal, or would you want him finding somebody on the far side of the crease to feed for an easy finish?
That's the thing. He can do both.
So it doesn't matter.
Right. That's what I mean by that. I mean, in that situation, especially, I would want him to have the ball. And I think that says a lot, because you could have a ton of other people that can do that. Rob Pinnell, Casey Powell, you know, a ton of guys behind the net, Junior, that could make something happen there. But I think that he's the one I would, you know, trust the most to make the play.
And in Saturday's other game of action, Boston and the Florida Launch square off at 7 p.m. And, you know, this is a game that is to stay alive a little bit as well. You know, Boston, as you mentioned, being in better position because of their tiebreaker, over the Ohio Machine. But I suppose, you know, kind of slicing off the, idea of playoff contention and, everything else, what are your thoughts on what you would like to see from this game as it relates to progress among either or both teams?
I would like to see Florida's defense show up. That'd be cool. One of the reasons that they have fallen down the order is their defense has not, you know, been there. They've been very absent. And part of that is due to, you know, guys like Durkin going to the US for the World Games, being injured prior to that. Sanosky in and out of the lineup. They had to fill a lot of spots. I mean, they had to grab, you know, Matt Harris off of Chesapeake's practice roster to like field the team a couple weeks ago. And they, you know, the other thing is too, they haven't been able to practice a lot because a lot of guys fly in for their games. So if they can't practice a lot because of travel problems, you know, there's going to be a lot of problems with them actually doing anything productive on the field. I think the creativity of McArdle and Powell has really evolved into a great partnership, you know, with mentor and mentee. It's great when they're clicking. It's amazing. I mean, Powell had a behind the back feed, turning behind the back feed to McArdle, who just in the same motion caught and sniped last week. It was on all the highlight, reels and stuff. And it was quite spectacular. I think with Boston, we'll see what they can do with the big guns back, with Buchanan and Rabel back. I mean, they played New York in an amazingly tight game, fun game to watch, really one of the better games, even though a lot of the stars for both teams weren't there. They still put on a show, and, you know, we'll see if Boston can benefit from the return of their best players.
And, you know, I guess just without getting too far away from the conversation, also MVP candidates, when you look at the top of the scoring charts this year, Casey Powell, Paul Rabel, we just talked about Eric Law. Those two guys are squaring off in this matchup. You know, last three games of the season oftentimes can be overwhelmingly significant on the results of these outcomes, you know, barring a, you know, 10-point game earlier in the year that just really inflates the stats. What's, you know, kind of the same question as I framed it, you know, about the team. So what would you like to see from each of these two? You know, Casey seems like maybe, just getting a little bit frustrated down the stretch of the season. And then, you know, on the flip side, obviously Paul, coming off having missed a game.
I would like to see both of those guys take control of their respective offenses. And I think that's much easier for Powell than it is for Rabel, because Rabel's going to be thrust back into the spotlight where, you know, he's the primary ball carrier. He's the star. The attack defers to the midfield. I don't think his experience was like that with the U.S. team. And at least for, the really competitive games that they played in. And I think that that's going to bear itself out. And I think that a lot of these USA guys are going to be mad coming back into the league, and people should be afraid of them. And I don't think that's the same thing for the Canadians. I think they're still celebrating, and I can't blame them. I'm not throwing shots, not throwing shade, but the USA guys are all ready to just rip someone's throat out and try to get for that last spot, especially these last couple teams that are vying for the final playoff spot. Other guys are still biding their time. And I think, you know, teams like New York and Denver might bleed more guys into their lineup and give those guys a better rest for a playoff push. So those teams are going to be weakened, this week and next week.
In the final game of the weekend, the Chesapeake BayHawks head to Lavelle Stadium to take on the New York Lizards. And Kyle, we talked earlier in this podcast about surprises. And the one thing that, you know, I didn't mention that I think a number of people would consider to be a surprise, and I've been in conversations with lacrosse people over the course of the last, you know, couple weeks or month about the MLL, and I think a lot of people don't realize how well the Lizards are playing, what their record is, and how secure their postseason spot is. Do you get that sense at all, and is that a surprise? The idea that here's a team with so much star power, and yet people are kind of acting on the assumption that they're underperforming?
I think people are just not watching the games and remembering or seeing them play. New York has not been outclassed in games like they were last year. And that's down to, you know, their stars playing better together, and also for Spallina finding where those guys need to play in relation to each other. So the big concern at the beginning of the season, and, you know, I wrote about this extensively, is can Karate play with Pinnell? And the answer is yes, but only if Karate plays midfield. They cannot play at X together. And since Karate has switched to midfield, New York has looked much, much, much better. They still are not great on man up, but they won an OT game against Boston with a man up goal. Marasco has really, really blossomed. I think that when they announced the U.S. team, I think a lot of people that were Lizards fans were shocked that JoJo didn't make it and David Lawson did. I think that conversation happened a lot. And you know, with Merritt, I think he's really blossomed into a playmaker and a goal scorer. You know, last year he couldn't buy a goal, and now he gets touches on the same, you know, run as Seabald, Pinnell, Strebel, and Crotty. And I think also bringing in a guy like Matt Gibson to balance out the other side of the field, has really helped them and make them look, you know, much more cohesive as an offensive unit.
Kyle, at this time next week, what's the MLL playoff picture going to look like?
I think we're still going to be undecided with Ohio and Boston, but I do think that Boston beats Florida, and that puts them in the catbird seat. I think that we're still going to be waiting for playoff stuff for another week. I think the last week of the season is still going to be somewhat irrelevant, but I think that the top three spots are locked down. And I think, you know, Boston has the easier matchup over Ohio, and they own the tiebreaker. And I really do think that Boston will get in with that spot. They'll find a way to win. They're due. One of the reasons I wrote that column, they're due. And getting beat by New York with a lot of their best players not there, I think will galvanize them for the run.
Kyle Devitt, that'll do it for the first post-World Championships edition of the MLL podcast. We're in a new world where Canada is the best lacrosse playing nation in the world. And, that's pretty much it.
World Championship? What's that? I was too busy getting a stupid haircut and taking selfies. I missed that. I missed that. What happened? Something happened?
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.